Welcome to Indie Game Business, where you'll learn to navigate the industry with ease. This show is produced by the Powell Group, the leading business consulting firm in the gaming industry. Visit us online at indiegame.business to learn about our online digital events. We have some amazing sessions with people in the gaming industry, and you can participate for free and purchase inexpensive passes to our industry-leading business-to-business system. Now, here we go, Indie Game Business.
What is up, everybody? Welcome. We are going to get Rachel here ready in 1 second. She's going to be going over her title of Business Succession and Continuity for Solo Indie Developers. So hang tight. We're going to get her ready.
All right. Are we on?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay. So, hello, everybody. And thanks for joining us today. So I'm Rachel Presser of Sonic Toa Consulting and Media. And today we're going to be doing like a little bit of an introductory, to the basics of estate succession and continuity planning tailored to any developers, very small teams if you're working by yourself. So for a little bit about me and Sonic Toad, if you're not familiar. So I'm a business consultant and educator. I actually have a background in tax law. I no longer prepare tax returns for compensation, but I am available, for consulting if you need help, setting up your business. Like, you don't really know what you're doing with the tax aspects and organization. You can consult with me at the links I provided here and more stuff on my link tree. And for a very shameless plug, I literally wrote the book on game developer taxes, although I don't really talk about these topics in there too much. But yeah, without further ado, have you ever had thoughts about death? Yeah, as the whole meme's been going around. It sounds like maybe a little unorthodox way to dive right into this, but I'm sure we've all had thoughts of death before about, what's going to happen when we're gone, or how we're going to go, or worse yet, like what's going to happen to all this cool stuff that we were working on while we're alive. But, well, I know that we have people from, all over the world, tuning in right now, but this is geared mostly, I guess, to an American perspective, because speaking from that perspective, it's just that we have a very like death negative culture, in the US, and we don't really, address this stuff head on. We don't really like to talk about it. Like, it's a very strange duality in that, we have a culture and society that's like extremely blasé to death, like at an institutional level, but at the same token, like on an individual level, we kind of fear it. We don't really like to talk about it, but we really should be. Because, when it comes to things, that affect us also on like the business level, like talking about estate planning, about succession, what a legacy is, it's all scary stuff. This is stuff that we don't really want to think about, such as, you're working on this game, you got this great idea, but like, what's going to happen to it if you die or you do become, too incapacitated to work on it for a while or maybe, ever again? And better yet, what if you're doing this, by yourself with a very small team? You don't really have, the resources, of a huge studio behind you. And then also, you know, comes down to, you know, hey, do you want to have it just, you know, die with you? Or would you entrust, you know, like another, you know, individual developer or studio to continue this legacy for you? And so, yeah, we do need to confront this stuff, and it's vastly under discussed. And so now, why am I bringing this up? Like, why am I having such a morbid topic for a presentation? And I just think that, you know, based on my experience, you know, as a tax accountant, I handled a lot of estate matters at the last practice that I worked at. I also have a certificate in probate administration, and, you know, the kind of things that we would, you know, discuss on the job, like, really just, you know, like, further prove to me how, like, death negative this society really is. And there's a lot of misconceptions about things like estate and succession planning. And I think that it's particularly important, though, for, like, younger generations to discuss right now, namely for that first reason I put at the top of this list, that we're still in a mass death and disabling event. You know, whether we want to acknowledge that or not, we have a lot of, you know, premature death that's happened in recent years and is still happening, and we got to confront that, you know. So there's not much maybe that we can do, like, on a society-wide level, but on an individual level, we got to take control of the things that we can. And then from a business perspective, you know, yeah, the business of games is constantly changing. And I find that this also kind of triangulates, though, with this specific issue, because something that we're seeing a lot more nowadays compared to, say, like when I got into, you know, indie games, like, you know, over a decade ago, is that we're seeing a lot more, from platforms and publishers, you know, having, I guess, such a strong grip, you know, on our business than we did in those first couple waves of indie developers. And this is opening up, you know, a couple issues when it comes to things like, you know, creating, you know, standard operating procedures, how it's going to work with distribution, you know, like managing, you know, all like the games you currently have up, managing future releases, where the funding for these titles comes from. Like, it all, it's definitely, yeah, gotten a lot different. And I think that, like, that definitely factors into how you're going to, you know, plan things like, you know, continuity, succession, and so on. And then in terms of, like, the legal aspects of this, so, yeah, as you could probably surmise, our legal system is definitely, you know, about 20, 30 years behind, although some states are slowly starting to catch up with this when it comes to things like, you know, like a digital legacy, which includes things like your social media accounts, any blogs you may have, anything that's got to be, you know, accessed by a password or that like you've put out, you know, onto the internet, which is pretty much, you know, up there forever. And that's in addition to any other, you know, digital, you know, assets you've created, like video games. And the way that these things get, you know, acknowledged in, you know, commercial and estate laws, it's like slowly starting to change, but we're still not quite where we need to be. And then the last one, of course, is that, yeah, a lot of indie devs in particular, you know, may not have a lot of the same resources that, like, that our employed, you know, counterparts tend to have, like life insurance, like access, you know, to an estate planner, which, you know, some really good jobs give you access to those things. So this is just, you know, a primer in these topics that we often find unpleasant. And yeah. And so, yeah, this, because this whole issue is just at a crossroads, yeah, of all these different concepts like estate planning, like the notion of business succession. Copyright law is another big one too. Game preservation. Because, like, that's the thing, like, we're seeing, you know, it's just like so many, not just games, but it's happening in movies, it's happening in music, where, you know, we have all these means, you know, to preserve all these, you know, like, amazing digital creations, but yet they're not really being preserved. Like, game preservation efforts is just like a whole other animal to dive into, but that kind of crosses into all this. And yes, and so that very last one, I actually did have a, you know, a book coming out about this. It's still currently held in limbo. So go yell at my publisher if you would like to read a book about the stuff that we're discussing today, except it goes into a much deeper dive. But yeah, these are just, you know, all different aspects, you know, things that, you know, we deal with, you know, in our day-to-day, like copyright laws and the fact that, like, a lot of our, you know, social and business infrastructure isn't really, you know, built for, you know, game development, but especially solo devs. Like, things are definitely gradually changing, but we've still got a ways to go. And the other big thing is that a lot of estate and succession planning resources usually are not meant, you know, for solo devs, because first there's also the whole social misconception that, oh, this is something I only have to worry about if, like, I'm old, sick, and or wealthy. And no, this is stuff you should be thinking about, even if, you know, those descriptors don't necessarily apply to you. But what tends to drive this, you know, this mindset home is that, yeah, unfortunately, though, a lot of, you know, traditional estate planning resources out there usually aren't meant, you know, to deal with our particular demographic. Yeah, because if you ever, like, you know, looked up, like, courses on this or videos, yeah, they're usually meant for, like, okay, you have, you know, some, like, big, you know, like, legacy company that's, like, you know, been around for a long time, and then, oh, you're going to either, like, leave it to your kids or, like, maybe, you know, like, sell it off to another business. And they don't really, you know, look at, like, some of the intricacies of, yeah, like, hey, I'm just one person. I made this game, or I made a couple different games, or maybe I made some middleware that I sold, you know, to another, you know, developer. And then they don't really know what to do with that. Because, yeah, if you ever, you know, if you ever did, like, look up anything about, like, how to do a business succession plan, yeah, they tend to, like, you know, cater mostly to, like, businesses with much higher income that are also brick and mortar. Like, they don't really have anything set up for, you know, our reality, which is usually you're either doing this by yourself or with a very small team. You don't necessarily even live in the same country, let alone in the same state, because that's also what makes this difficult and overwhelming, something that we don't like to think about, because unlike the federal tax code, we don't have a federal probate. This is going to be so different, you know. Yeah, whether you're in New York or Toronto or in you know, in Dubai, like, whenever, no matter, like, where you are, you're going to have, you know, some different laws that apply no matter where you are. That's going to go for you. It's going to go for any, like, successors or beneficiaries that you name. And yeah, and so this is definitely what makes it, you know, difficult and, like, a daunting, you know, prospect for a lot of people, and why we don't really like to confront this. And not to mention that, you know, a lot of indie developers are also in other groups that tend to be sidelined in traditional estate planning. I've made this whole page just based on not only what I feel personally experienced, but what I saw, you know, in practice, that a lot of standard operating procedures really based on, you know, the assumption that you're married with kids, and it's just, and that you have, you know, yeah, like, other family that you have good relationships with, that you're in contact with, which, hey, as a, you know, as a queer, unmarried, child abuse survivor, someone who fits a lot of things on these lists, I've definitely taken that perspective, you know, with me to a lot of my work, because a lot of, yeah, estate planning, you need to take extra, you know, precautions with some of these, because it's really not structured, you know, yet, if you don't have kids and so on. And so there's different, you could, I said, there's ways to get around this, but yeah, it's just one reason of many why a lot of people tend to, like, not really think about, you know, yeah, estate, succession, anything else. Cause it's just, I said, those resources tend to just assume that you have someone who's going to take over automatically. But I can also tell you from my practice experience that no, your oldest child is not necessarily going to be the one who is the best fit to manage these affairs when you're gone. Let me just put it like that. So we don't have time for this whole video, and I put a timestamp here in case, you know, this wasn't able to play, but I'm going to play the first few minutes of this amazing video from Ask a Mortician, because it's just, no, she's just a fantastic resource for so much related to these topics. She talks mostly about like what actually happens to your body, which is a bit out of my realm here, but she does address a lot of the reasons, you know, why we don't want to confront, you know, death as a society and on an individual level. And then I'm going to cut the video around the mark I mentioned here, but yeah, let me just get this clip rolling.
Welcome back, Deathlings. Something I have been thinking about recently is why people have such trouble tackling and facing their fear of death. It occurred to me that a lot of people are probably unaware of what their fear actually is. And if you don't know what the fear is, it's just going to be one big black void of threat, like death. Mufasa. Death. It's just a nebulous, unknown fear, which is the worst kind because you can't do anything about it. Say you have a box in front of you with a pizza in it. You can't just pick up the whole pizza and eat it. It would be too overwhelming. But if you cut the pizza into individual slices and eat them slowly over a period of hours while watching Netflix, you can certainly consume that whole pizza. I'm not saying you should. I'm just saying I have anecdotal evidence that you could. So let's cut this thing into slices. This is an exercise that I did for the first time at a talk last week in North Carolina. It's based on an article from the Journal of Abnormal and Social Psychology, and you may remember a version of it from my book. First, I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. Now take a deep breath in and exhale.
I didn't have to fix my hair. Eyes are closed right now.
Deep breath in, exhale. Are your eyes really closed? I'm watching you. I'm going to read 7 reasons that people are afraid of death, and I want you to think about which ones are really your fears. Not just things that sound scary, but things that are really your fears. For example, I don't want to be eaten alive by a shark, but I don't walk around my daily life actively afraid of sharks, if you know what I mean. Number 1, I'm afraid to die because my death would cause grief to my relatives and friends. Number 2, I'm afraid to die because all of my ambition, my plans, my projects would come to an end. Number 3, I'm afraid to die because I'm worried the process of death might be painful. Number 4, I'm afraid to die because I would no longer be able to have any experiences. Number 5, if I died, I would no longer be able to care for my dependents. Number 6, I'm afraid to die because I'm afraid of what might happen to me if there is life after death. Finally, number 7, I'm afraid to die because of what might happen to my body after I die. And open your eyes. I hope that there were 1 or 2 in there that really resonated with you and you went, oh, yes, yeah, that one, that's my fear. Now you need to get to work on addressing that particular fear, which is much easier than just the monolith of terror. I'm gonna recommend just a few things to get you started. Say you're a number 1, worried about the grief of your friends and relatives. Maybe start by reading some grief memoirs. I just read The Fantastic Men We Reaped by Jesmyn Ward, or the epilogue that my friend Lucy Kalanithi wrote for her husband Paul's book, When Breath Becomes Air. Books like these show just how resilient survivors are and just how much it is possible to go on after a death. Maybe even consider writing personal notes to your nearest and dearest to be put aside in the case of your eventual death, so that they can read it and get that message directly from you. What if you're a number 2, afraid that all of your plans and projects will come to an end? I know a little something about this, as I am a number 2 myself, both in sex appeal ranking and death fears. I have to make sure I know how my nonprofit and my funeral home are going to continue on after I die. I have to make sure I have good people running them and that I have money set aside. I really think that addressing this one is all about organization and logistics. If you're one of the people worried that the...
Okay. So yeah, I would definitely recommend watching the rest of this on your own time because yeah, she's just a fantastic resource on all this stuff. And yeah, the organization and logistics is really like what we're going to focus on, you know, for the rest of this talk. So yeah. What was this thing? I'm sorry, having some technical difficulties here. Okay. There we go. So yeah. Because yeah, so there's just so many reasons, yeah, why, you know, we don't want to confront the inevitable that I got into, that, you know, Ask a Mortician just got into. And whenever I brought this stuff up, you know, in the past, like I've been accused of having like a doomer mindset, you know, what have you. Like I even have a friend, you know, who's a lawyer, and way back when I was, you know, first figuring this stuff out, when I started, you know, my first company, and I was just to go, hey, you know, Jevy, you know, recommendations for, you know, a lawyer who does wills, and she's be like, oh my God, are you like sick or something? And this is someone in the freaking legal profession doing this, by the way. Like, no, you don't have to wait till you're old, till you're sick. It's not a doomer thing. No, this is smart preparation. You know, this is peace of mind, because yeah, this is not, you know, like a whole doom and gloom thing. It's just that we can't control everything that's going to happen, especially, you know, these days we're up against so many different forces that we cannot control, but we can have some peace of mind, you know, yeah, by like tackling, yeah, that organization and logistics in advance, and then revisiting, you know, and adjusting these plans, you know, as needed. And then that way, you know, yeah, you'd be like, yo, hey, if something, you know, does happen to me, yeah, like my creative vision's gonna be able, you know, to come through to fruition, or if this is how you feel about it, no one else can touch it. It will go with me, or my loved ones and causes I support will be taken care of. Like, you know, whatever it is that, you know, that you want to do, having these plans, you know, is going to give you a lot of peace of mind. So what are your objectives then, you know, to do this organization, you know, and logistics? And so there's both, you know, yeah, business and personal elements to this. And so you have, you know, your three big goals here, which would be to create an estate plan, even if it's a very, you know, simple one, forming a business succession plan, and then creating, you know, business continuity procedures, which is, yeah, the three big D's: disaster, death, and disability. And yeah, even if like your succession plan isn't like, you know, a super, you know, detailed, like organizational chart with like tons of procedures, it's at least like, you know, a simple outline of what, you know, you, or if you're working, you know, with a team, like what you feel would be like your best backup plan. And so the goals of like creating, you know, these specific documents and making sure that there's someplace where you and like, you know, and your business and personal supports can easily find them is that, yeah, namely that, you know, you're going to make sure that like your final wishes are correctly formalized. And that, you know, if you have, you know, unfinished games, other unfinished projects, and that they're either going to go with you if that's what you want, or if you would like to have, you know, your teammates pick up, maybe have another developer or like a, you know, game dev collective, you know, pick up on it. You get to outline if that's also what you would like, depending on what type of studio that you run, or, you know, or what else that you do for a living. It can either, you know, keep going or die with you if that's what you would like. And then the biggest thing is that, yeah, you don't want anything to go into probate, especially not a business, because that just creates a massive bottleneck. More about that later. And yeah, and even if you're not, you know, entirely sure, you know, yeah, like what you would want, you know, the what ifs, you know, to look like, you're at least, you know, thinking about it. You're getting something together. You're giving us some thought. And that's a start. And so you may have like, yeah, heard these, you know, terms before, and I know that they can get, you know, really confusing, which just, you know, adds to why we don't like to confront this stuff. And so to make it, you know, simple for you, I put some definitions here. Like this barely scratches like the surface. There's like other aspects of an estate plan, but I'm just going to talk about the ones that are like the most important, you know, to small indie devs. And that would be, yeah, like, it's basically a collection of, yeah, all these specific end of life documents, mainly things like healthcare directives, you know, like, which is like things like healthcare proxy, you know, like DNR orders, like that kind of stuff. That's a whole other realm, but the ones I really want to focus on are the two that I've highlighted here, which would be like a will and a living trust. You may have like also you've been confused by the term living will, and which is also known as an advance directive. And so what this document does is that it's pretty much just what gives a loved one or another personal representative some kind of like authority with your healthcare decisions or pretty much anything else that you would want for end of life. It's different than these other two documents, which your will is it's also called your last will and testament, which is where that outlines like all your personal assets that get left, to any heirs that you name. And then the living trust would be, if you become totally, you're alive, but you're incapacitated. And then that's like, okay, so who's going to manage, your assets, which includes your business, if you're alive, but not really able to do anything with it. And then you also need to name a personal representative. It's also known as your executor of estate. Ask a Mortician has a lot of great videos on like how you can go about, picking a personal representative. I would definitely recommend, looking at those if it's something that you've been thinking about. But one thing I want to make clear here is that your personal representative is not the same as your successor. If you've been thinking about, naming a successor, they can be if that is what you want. If you trust them, to continue operations, and you think that like they would want to do this and that they have the capability, you absolutely can. Name the same person to be both, your business successor and your personal representative. But in terms of legality, they are actually not totally the same thing. And so, because the other important consideration is that, even if you have a very small, one person, game studio or whatever else that you're doing, you still need to get, some kind of, valuation engagement, like when your estate gets calculated. Okay, so important note about wills. There's not enough time to like really do a deep dive on wills. I was going to do that in the book that was supposed to be coming out by now, but my publisher still has me sitting in limbo on this. So just as a very like briefly summarize this. If you're gonna get like a very basic will put together, also known as your last will and testament. A very important thing I just want to mention is that if you're going to get like one of those, legal kits, like just to have something, it's a good start, but you do need to make sure it's correctly formalized based on where you currently live. And so your entire estate plan should be reviewed, and updated every year, but your last will and testament though is particularly important if you go through any of like the major life changes that I just listed, because like we previously said, the laws are different, according to every state, every country, and some of them have different, processes for how to correctly formalize a will. So like, I know that in some counties, like you actually have to get like a witness and like get it notarized. Others, you just take it to a lawyer and you're pretty much good to go. So yeah, this is based on where you currently live. So you should find out, what the procedure is, where you are. And then if you move, look into it, after you get through all the logistics, of moving. So business succession now is something it's related, to the whole estate plan, but it's something that though pertains though to an exit. So this, could be, like something just totally separate of all that, but it factors in because basically it means that like, you're exiting the company one way or another. So whether it's going to be that you're going to just sell your interest, to a new owner or maybe even the whole company. If you have, your studio set up, with some, one or more co-owners, you're just going to, hand it off to them, or in the event of your death or, like severe incapacitation, the company's going to live on, but you're otherwise, you know, evexigen. And so, yeah, I know that like a lot of people are reading this last one saying, oh, come on, like retirement, it's something that our generation's just never going to see. I know, but still, if someday you would like to, you know, yeah, either retire, maybe like move on to another career because you never know where life's going to take you, or you just want to, you know, either like sell the entire studio, if not, you know, just selling a specific, you know, copyright, you still need to have some kind of, you know, succession plan in place. Even if it's just you eventually closing, you still got to get this down, you know, in some way.
Indie Game Business has one of the longest running digital event series in the gaming industry, with hundreds of publishers, investors, developers, and tech companies to meet with. All the sessions are always free to watch forever, and you can get a free pass to receive all the slide decks from all their speakers. The tickets for meetings start just at $50. Go to indiegame.business and use the code IGBPODCAST to get 20% off your ticket.
So what happens though, yeah, if you have a sole proprietorship, you know, you have, you know, just one owner and then that's it. So most of the time, it's just going to die with you, pretty much. You know, it dies with you. Your last will and testament is what presides here, because everything that your studio owned is now going to become part of your personal estate. And then that basically gets, you know, distributed among your beneficiaries. If it does, you know, hopefully it's not going to go into probate, but that's pretty much what happens though, when you don't have, you know, unincorporated business, it usually just dies with you. But when you have it as a single member LLC, this also sometimes happens. It depends on mainly where you live, and if you also did anything with your LLC's operating agreement. Because for everything that happens at the personal level, your estate plan is pretty much supposed to like take care of that. But at the business level, like your operating agreement is where you should have any succession instructions. A multiple member LLC can still continue, you know, even if like one of the original owners, you know, dies. Basically, they have to elect if they're going to, you know, like just like, you know, take on your interest, and then they keep going, or the whole company, you know, just dissolves. And then if you're going to like leave your entire LLC or your interest in a multiple member LLC, it works a lot similarly to just, you know, like selling a business. And then in effect though, like, yeah, like everything is going to pretty much like live on as far as like the game, any other like, you know, digital assets like websites and social media accounts, like all that still lives on. But in terms of like legality, they're actually going to own a new business entity. And so as for sole owner corporations, because, you know, some game developers operate as a single owner S or C corporation, they actually function kind of like similarly for this concept, namely because a corporation, unlike a sole proprietorship or a partnership, it's actually designed to, you know, exist like forever, you know, that like it's a corporation, you know, it basically exists in its own right. It's its own entity. And if one owner dies, you know, the shares can, you know, be easily distributed again without, you know, without needing to dissolve. And that if you don't have anything, you know, like set aside in the operating agreement or in your estate, the default that happens is that your shares then become part of your estate, and then the company continues. Your heirs now have like, yeah, like the same, like, you know, ownership and voting rights that come with like having that business. And then it's up to them if they want to pretty much, you know, keep it or sell it. But if you want that company to die with you, but you also want a specific, like, you know, IP to continue, then Yeah, you would need to copy. I mean, I'm sorry. You need to contact one of the copyright attorneys that we have here, and then ask them about, you know, how to basically handle that a little bit separately from your overall succession plan. And then there's something called a buy-sell agreement, which is like vastly under discussed, which is why I'm discussing it today. This is a great option for solo indie developers because, yeah, if you don't have any co-owners and if like, yeah, you may not necessarily have, you know, any heirs that you're naming, you know, in the will who would be interested, you know, in picking up where you left off. What it pretty much is that it's like a predetermined sale, you know, triggered by whatever circumstance that you want to define in this agreement, which is that it's usually going to be death or sometimes incapacitation. But then this buyout price is determined by one of the methods that I outlined here. And for most game studios, alternative valuation is probably like the one you're going to go with. And so, yeah, if you have like another, you know, studio that you think would be, you know, a good fit for, like working on the types of games that you also work on, this would be a very good option. Same if you also, if you're working with a publisher and, you know, yeah, usually, you know, they just, you know, like, you know, yeah, the way that would work is you have to like, you know, you'd have to check your agreement, but they may have, you know, you may have like some kind of like relinquishment there where they just, you know, have another studio pick it up. But then if you're not working with one, yeah, that's still something that is worth looking into if you would trust them to handle this matter. So, okay, now we're going to go into continuity because this factors in with the other two plans, but it's a little bit different because this is mostly for, you know, keeping the studio operational where your goal is to keep it operational, but you can't operate, you know, for an extended time frame. And usually, it's because of a disaster, the death or incapacitation, you know, of you or another, co-owner, if your devices get stolen. I don't need to name names here, but if certain, vendors, now make you rethink your entire development plans because you had a lot lined up with them and then they decided to screw thousands of people all at once. Yeah, you know who I'm talking about here. Yeah, you know what I'm getting into. Yeah, and you're all thinking, okay, oh crap, we are so screwed now. You know, what are we going to do? And so what this business continuity plan does is that, you know, it helps create, you know, some standard operating procedures, you know, in the event that you just can't, you know, you can't keep things going for like a while, not just like, you know, a few days or not just like a week for a conference. We're talking like months, even years at a time. And so, yeah, these are pretty much all the concerns that like, you know, that we tend to have with business continuity. Like this would be things like devices get stolen or lost, destroyed because of natural disasters, which even though we work, you know, in the cloud so much these days, you know, still like we kind of need our devices, you know, to work. And this applies to like so many industries, not just, you know, game and software development anymore. But yeah, like you can still end up, you know, losing access though to that cloud server anytime, and data can get stolen, it can get compromised, you know, just so much can happen. Expectations from from platforms are also becoming a big continuity concern as well. That's why I brought it up earlier, because in the old days when, you know, you were pretty much responsible, you know, for your own distribution, for your own version control and all else, like it had its pluses and minuses. But now that we have, so much more power coming from, you know, these platforms like Steam and so on, there's definitely things that can happen that will, you know, disrupt continuity if they boot certain games from the platform. Now you're out of income, so you better start making a continuity plan for how you would handle direct sales and distribution. Things like unfulfilled publisher agreements if you can't get paid. If you do any manual orders, or this second to last one's really for like the tabletop space mostly. But yeah, if you have unfulfilled orders, if your customers aren't getting, you know, the things that they needed, that can cause a major continuity issue if your operations are going to be offline for a while and no one can get in touch with you. If you have any royalty payments that you owe other team members, people who worked on your games. Yeah, these are all like major things that need to be addressed in a business continuity plan. So now how do you go about doing that? Well, one of the first things you really should do is, like, you know, obviously build when times are good. The times when you're not really thinking about this stuff is when you should start to address it. You know, work with a lawyer, work with an accountant, you know, have their contact information, you know, someplace where you can easily find it, both in a physical and a digital space. And yes, your lawyer is usually going to be the first person that your business colleagues and your next of kin will contact if something happens to you. And yeah, same thing for, you know, passwords, any other assets, in case any of those accounts ever get frozen. You want to keep, you know, some kind of means of being able to access them easily. Yeah, and maintain your contact with publishers, you know, account reps, and also give their contact info, you know, to someone you trust, whether that's at the business or the personal level, you know, so that if something happens with you, they have a way of contacting to be like, you know, hey, they're either like really sick or they're dealing with an emergency, but they will be able to, you know, fulfill their agreement. And this is a big one. Always keep all of your legal documents in a place where you can easily find and reference them. If you have like one of those, like, you know, contract signing accounts like HelloSign or what have you, yeah, those are not always like, you know, handy for when you're signing agreements, you know, to other people to sign, but that's also an excellent place just to keep, you know, any like contracts that you've signed. Keep them in one place where you can easily find them. Nobody wants to be sifting through like pages and pages of emails trying to find that one Word document that's got the agreement. No, you want to keep all those agreements. You can easily find them, reference them, and then, yeah, communicate with like any parties that you're in touch with, you know, ASAP. And then, you know, yeah, because obviously the first thing you want to do, you know, is like tell them if you don't think you can complete the project. That's the big thing. Are you going to have to, you know, either cut your losses or just maybe see if you can like modify the terms, modify the deadlines, you know, if you really just don't think you can fulfill things now that you have, you know, this disaster that you're facing head on. And then, yeah, and of course, because, you know, solo devs, you know, don't have the same resources that a larger studio has. And so if you don't think you're going to be able to afford, you know, outsourcing, you know, all these different, you know, tasks, focus on the ones that you're like legally mandated, you know, yeah, like taxes. That's the big one. Like, focus on the stuff that like is like legally mandated, then you'll prioritize the ones that are like super important to you, and then save like, you know, the less urgent stuff for when you can resume operations safely. And then you want, you know, then you gotta like, you know, figure out a support system among, you know, colleagues and friends. And this is just plain gonna look different, you know, for everybody. Like, you know, I know that sometimes, you know, this profession can feel kind of isolating, you know, but we do have a big, you know, community. You likely do have other people who, you know, care about you and care about what you're working on. And so, yeah, you definitely should be thinking about, you know, if there's other, you know, studios and like business services that you would be able to trust, you know, to like help out with these specific operations. If you're either unable to, or that like you need to offload certain things. And then what are some other like alternative, you know, projects and like revenue sources you can look into? Yeah, if you're, if the engine is something you can no longer work with, if a platform is going to either like, you know, take too big of a cut or, you know, provide unfavorable terms, or they just pull it from the market altogether. And then another thing to also think about is like, what's your extinction, you know, indicator versus just, you know, like taking, you know, like a break from, you know, from screens. And so definitely notify people, you know, close to you so that they know like what your extinction indicator is. Like for me personally, if it's been like several days since I've posted cute photos of my pet dinosaur on social media, that's usually an indicator something's up, you know? So communicate that, you know, to the people close to you. That way, you know, they can like, you know, check on you and be like, oh, hey, maybe I should, you know, contact their business partner or contact, you know, this other company they were working with if it looks like something's gone wrong. And then, yeah, and as for everything else, so yeah, I know this is all daunting stuff. Running a business, you know, can get daunting. Same for thinking about these like unpleasant, you know, aspects like, you know, estate succession continuity. So you got to do what works through here, like things like setting reminders or using different like project management tools. It's not an autopilot. So you got to figure out, you know, some kind of system that's going to work for you. And we also just got to accept the inevitable. This is just, I think, one of the things that comes with, you know, living in such a death negative society that we have a hard time accepting, you know, the inevitable. And that, hey, look, the only certain things in life are death and taxes. You know, I know that a lot of us, you know, we're blindsided by what a certain big game engine just did. A lot of people have also, you know, yeah, you faced, you know, whether it's good or bad circumstances, like, you know, hey, maybe you, you know, got some kind of offer, either for a really good job, maybe, you know, you've had a kid, some other big, you know, life change that just, you know, caused you to like, either like, you know, put your projects on the sidelines or, you know, something else, you know, came up where, yeah, you're just not gonna be able to like, you know, finish what you're working on. Or there's also just a lot of unfortunate circumstances that, you know, cause us to not finish what we started. And yeah, projects can die just like us, you know, they can become vaporware. And yeah, you can make all these plans, they can still go awry, but you know, it's still for the best to like, you know, accept the inevitable and, you know, confront the possibilities that we don't want to confront and at least, you know, have some like degree of like, okay, hey, I have a plan if something, you know, goes wrong. And then it's better to do that than to just like, you know, pretend everything's always going to be okay. And then, yeah, you also just got to, you know, do annual check-ins. That's like, I think the big thing a lot of people tend to miss on both the business and the personal levels. I saw this a lot when I still practiced tax law. And that it's definitely not a one and done process. Like you need not be thinking about it like every single day, but like once a year, a major life and or business changes is usually the time to like, yeah, that's when you reassess your succession continuity and estate plans. Yeah. Cause you know, stuff in your life's going to change, you know, the business world changes. The games industry is certainly no exception. Our laws constantly change. So yeah, these are things that just require, you know, like checking in like once a year. Or when you have some big change coming up, and then you can start by yourself and then, yeah, then work, you know, with lawyers, accountants, business consultants, you know, to like give more input on what they think, you know, makes sense, you know, for your needs in particular, because yeah, this is very, you know, highly personal stuff. Like everyone's plan is going to look different. Everyone's business is going to look different. And so as for some other like resources, for estate and succession planning that I recommend, yeah, we have some wonderful gaming attorneys, you know, right here, you know, in the indie games business community. They're here to help you. I'm here to help you. You know, we want to make sure that, you know, everyone gets this stuff, you know, done correctly. Yeah, if you have any like local business events, yeah, like I actually was just at one here in LA, the B2B Marketing Expo. Yeah, I did see a couple different estate, you know, and probate lawyers who were boothing there, you know, doing this exact kind of services that I'm discussing. Yeah, that's also a good resource show to like, you know, find somebody in your area, because this does have a very specifically local angle compared to some of the other, you know, like business and legal stuff I've discussed in the past at IGB. Because the laws are just like so different everywhere you go, literally. So with that being said, too, your state bar referral service and your local legal aid are also good places to look if you're on a budget and, you know, you don't really have, the time, the money to, like, you know, do a whole, like, estate consultation, which, yeah, a lot of people don't. They're a great resource, if you just want to, you know, like, put something together. Like, yeah, you want to get, like, one of those, you know, like, legal kits from, like, Staples or something. And then you call them up and just be like, you know, hey, can you guys refer me, you know, to, like, an estate lawyer, like, you know, in my city or my county? I just put this together to, like, make sure that, like, my small game studio is taken care of. Can they just look this over to make sure I did it correctly and tell me how to formalize this properly? Like, your state bar referral service is, like, a very, very, like, underutilized resource. So definitely look them up. You can sometimes get a free consultation, or it's, like, a nominal fee, like $30 or $50. Definitely something worth looking into. And like I mentioned, like in the video I showed earlier, Ask a Mortician is a fantastic resource for this stuff. As it's a lot of her content is focused mostly on, like, a lot of, like, the spiritual, you know, aspects of, you know, confronting death and like what happens to your body, literally. But she does have some great videos on things, like how to choose a personal representative, how to do a lot of, like, those, like, logistical aspects, you know, of end-of-life plans, which include what happens with a business. Definitely something worth looking into. Yeah. And so, yes, thank you for sticking through this morbid presentation, which I hope gives you at least a little bit of, like, demystification and some peace of mind. Thank you for attending this awesome show. There's a lot of other great speakers here. Got all my stuff here in the footer for your business and estate education and consulting and copywriting needs. Visit me at snottoad.com. And I can stick around for some Q&A.
Yeah, we got some Q&A. How's all it right. going, Rachel? You ready?
Hi, Dan. How are you? Yeah, I had the COVID booster. It's been kicking my ass a bit, but I've been able to soldier on. That's why I think I got a little, like, droning at some parts of this.
Soldier on. Well, you know, I think that's the second least wanted to talk about subject, you know what I mean, is death. Yeah. The first is, like, forming your business. Everyone just wants to make a game. Nobody wants to make a business, you know.
These are all the topics I specialize in. So right.
All the things that you don't want to specialize. See, you could just go to her and she will help you out. Okay, we got some questions right here. Great. From Lady Game Professor on YouTube. As a single parent in Southern California, would I need to set up a trust for my kid to take over my company when he's an adult? And I'm sure you addressed this, but if you want to talk specifically about that.
So I didn't dive into that, like, too heavily, but that's a great question. So I think that you would need to set up a trust because the way that it works with, like, you know, when you have a business, when you have, like, other assets and like a minor child cannot access them, that goes into, like, either, I'm sorry, I'm, like, kind of, like, zoning out here a bit because so that COVID booster kicked my ass. Because, like, I didn't really handle a lot of trust matters when I was still practicing, but I think that the trust would be the way to go. I would definitely look into, like, you know, contacting your bar referral service to, like, get more assistance on this question. This is one I'm not totally sure of, but yeah, because usually, no, I mean, a minor cannot, like, pick up your business right away.
Okay. That's a good answer. Good idea to do it. Okay,
yeah, it's good to do it. But one thing I will mention is that the IP is a separate matter from the company. So, like, if you still want to, like, retain the copyright, but, like, sell the actual entity, you would have to, like, set that copyright aside into a trust first. Then the business, you know, is, like, either, like, sold to somebody else or,
It's a little bit more deeper. You know what? You can reach out to her at this right here. SonicToad.com. You can reach out to go more in depth about that.
Yeah, it's a bit of a
Okay, so from Discord, what role does community building and player engagement play in the long-term success and continuity of a, whoops, my phone, I forgot to mute, and how can developers effectively maintain these relationships over time?
That's also a great question. Yeah, because obviously, yeah, because like having like a community, you know, is having a community is obviously going to be a big factor in both short-term and long-term success. So it's like having like a community manager, whether you have them on full time or someone who, like, you know, who does community management for like multiple studios, is definitely going to help you, because, you know, yeah, it's just, it's a lot, you know, managing a community is a lot, because, you know, you have all the different, you know, social accounts and like actually, you know, talking to fans. Like, we'd never get anything done, you know, if we were like, you know, if you were answering emails and Discord messages all day long. So having you know, having definitely having like some kind of community management infrastructure is going to be a big, very big crucial part of that.
Which having luckily, an amazing community manager that will go into every single channel in Discord every single day and write something and answer questions and talk to people.
Exactly.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to do that.
It is. And so nowadays, I mean, yeah, like the role of the community manager has like really like, you know, evolved. Like, so many more studios and even like companies that, that aren't even in the games industry are seeing like the extreme value, you know, that that community managers provide. So there's like entire, there's entire, you know, like firms dedicated to community management now. There's freelance community managers if you can't afford a full-time one. And so that's definitely a big part of continuity for sure.
Right. Okay, let's see. We got two more. We got plenty of time from Discord. How can a solo indie game dev make sure their business keeps running well if they can't work on it anymore or decide to stop? And what things should they think about and do to make this happen smoothly?
So, yeah, if you, this really depends on if you can't run it for a while, but you want to come back, or you want to stop completely. That's really what is going to affect the answer to this, because yeah, if you just want, if you want to keep the business like operational, you know, definitely start with like your lawyer and accountant, you know, and if you have any like ongoing agreements at the moment, such as you know, you're either contracted with a company or a publisher, or you know, you want to start with those parties first and then, you know, tell them what's happening. Be like, hey, I won't be able to work on this, you know, for a while. Like, what can, like, basically, yeah, like, what kind of, like, infrastructure can I put in place? Just keep things, like, running at the bare minimum until I can return. But if you want to shut down completely, that's a whole other discussion. Because, yeah, you can't, I mean, but you can wind down. That's what the official term is, winding down. And then start up again later. But, yeah, there's, you have a couple options there, but it really depends on what you want to do in both the long term and the short term.
And if you want to keep it going over long term, right, and get back to it, you, it's probably good to maintain your social media at least, the very, very least. You know what I mean?
Yeah, in terms of like, in terms of like keeping it alive in like the legal sense, you definitely want to, yeah, speak to, yeah, lawyer and accountant first, because even if the business makes no money, chances are you still got to do tax filing at the least. And you don't want, because believe me, you don't want to deal with piling up IRS and state notices when you're still dealing with whatever extenuating circumstances you're dealing with. It's like one other big stressor nobody wants. So you have that. And then, yeah. And then in terms of like the other, like more public facing stuff. Yeah. Like, if there's even just like an interim, you know, like social media person, you can, you know, ask to be like, hey, can you just, you know, like help me, you know, like make a couple, you know, posts for like the next couple of months or over the next year. And yeah, you usually can work with somebody on a contract basis in those times.
Well, there's another question, and I'm just going to answer it real quick. What role does saving money and planning finances play in keeping a solo indie game dev business going strong? And I'm going to say huge.
Yeah.
That Trace is huge. But I'm going to ask you other questions about Sonic Toad. So let's say somebody, they have a business or they got an LLC and there's a few people in it, but they have no idea what they're doing. They form the LLC. They've been working. They've been handling their money. They're like, I honestly don't know what to do. Like, how do I file taxes with five people in an LLC? So they come to you. What happens? What's the process with that for you? And what is your consulting cost also?
So I have pretty much all the information's up on my website, sonictoad.com. I'll just pop it in the little chat box here.
Sonictoad.com. Here, I can put it in here.
Pretty simple link. I just popped it in the... Oh, I think it's still on private. My bad. it's just
sonictoad.com. I put it in there.
Consulting. I also have a link where you can consult with me by the minute. clarity.fm/sonictoad. That's a good option if you just have like one or two burning questions, or like you're not totally sure, you know, what your budget is. This is also a good option if you just want to talk for like 10-15 minutes. So that's my pricing, so it's all transparent. And pretty much every engagement, you know, looks different because every studio is different. Everyone has different personal and business, financial considerations. And so pretty much like what I do is like, I ask them for like what they basically, what problem and what like, conundrum do you specifically have that you need me to either, walk you through or research? Because some people have, some pretty interesting, like business conundrums. And they're not totally sure, how to handle them. Like the example you just gave, if I have five co-owners, should we do an LLC or a corporation? Because that's gonna have such different answers depending on where are they located? What other income sources do they have? What are your goals as a company? Is there something specific you're looking to accomplish after you get your LLC or your corporation established? Like, are you trying to go for an investor? Are you trying to go for publisher funds? Or are you self-funding? And if so, how much is each person, contributing? Or is anyone contributing something non-cash? Like if you have, say, patents or copyrights?
So it's basically the short answer is the infamous indie game business answer of it depends.
Yes, that's also the answer.
It depends.
In the tax business too. It depends. It says as everyone's situation is just so unique. And
Well, awesome. Thank you so much. We're coming. The next talk is coming up right after this. We've got a few more. Three more coming, I believe. So stay tuned. And thank you so much, Rachel, once again for coming on Indie Game Business. I don't know how many you've been on, but I know it's been a couple few. That's the southern term.
Now go yell at my publisher so they can get my book out about all the stuff I just talked about today. Where I'm not flagging at certain points because the COVID booster kicked my ass.
Yeah. So. And that information is well needed. And thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for having me again.
Stay tuned for the next one. Thanks for listening to Indie Game Business. You can learn more about the show and our online business networking events at indiegame.business.